Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Aleph, page 252. Last week we were learning the way Yehuda and the brothers come back to Yosef after Binyamin was caught, so to speak, with Yosef's goblet in his bag. And Yehuda, as we learned, is ready for war. And he starts screaming at Yosef, "Is this, you don't keep your word. You said you want to look at him, at Binyamin, and you end up keeping him. And he generally had no business asking us all these questions that you asked us. And what's going on over here?" And then Yehuda starts pleading with him. He says, "If I don't come back with Binyamin, my father's going to die." So it's like everybody's dying on the same day. So the Pasuk says, see, you have to announce the pages, so we have to put at least your in your place for the announcement. Layachal Yosef lehisapik. Yosef couldn't restrain himself. And here's the different ways of learning this pasuk, because grammatically you have to switch a few words around, Rashi says, even to make it sound correct. Layachal Yosef lehisapik. Yosef cannot restrain himself. Lachol anitzavim olav. In the presence of all those that were with him. Now, Rashi says, it means he couldn't bear for the Egyptian bystanders to be there when he's telling his brothers who he was. And there's a lot of reasons for this. One reason is that he didn't want to let all the Egyptians know that his brothers sold him as a slave. You know. And another point is Mepharshim said that Yosef really risked his life, because the brothers could have killed him now. Everybody's leaving, and the brothers were angry at him. They could have done something drastic to him. But basically, Yosef was holding self-control. He didn't want to reveal himself to the brothers in front of them, that they shouldn't get embarrassed, or so on. And he said, so what did he say? Vayikra, and he called out, "Heitziyo chol ish me'olei. Get rid of every person for me. I don't want anybody here." Now, the Rashbam explains that up to here, Yosef was able to restrain himself. Now that he was about to burst out crying, he didn't want to do it in front of everybody, so he had to scream that they should get out. Other people learned that he couldn't bear, and what do you mean he couldn't hold himself back, that from crying. So it goes on to crying. Other people say that it's not nice for a ruler, for a king, to start crying in front of everybody. So he had to get rid of everybody. And the Mepharshim point out, in the previous times, Yosef cried, he was able to walk away and cry. But the Mepharshim say, now that Yehuda was screaming at him, a whole crowd gathered, and everybody became very emotionally involved on Yehuda's side. And they started thinking, you know, this is not nice. Let the kid go back to his father. What do you want from him already? You know, let the kid go back. His father's going to die, and so on and so forth. So the Ramban explains that many Egyptians started telling Yosef, let the kid go. So Yosef says to him, you know what, let me speak to my brothers. I mean, to my brothers. Let me speak to these people alone. Everybody just leave. So some people learn.
How would they dare to speak? Is the king speaking there and they give them advices? How would they dare to do this?
Why not? You're allowed to talk to the king, you're allowed to beg him for mercy. People always used to beg kings for mercy.
King tell I'll do like this and then everybody tell him no.
Yeah, people used to tell the kings to please don't do things.
We don't pray to Hashem for mercy.
Yeah, we do. It's not something else. Yosef was the king, basically. I mean,
yeah,
okay,
he was
second
president or something like that.
Yeah, but he was second in command. As far as everybody was concerned, Yosef was the number one guy.
But the king or pharaoh or whatever
wasn't there, no. The Medrash says, why couldn't Yosef hold himself back? Now he was partially afraid of Yehuda, that he was going to do something drastic and kill him. So that's what he couldn't hold himself. And he said, call out, take everybody out of here. Now, the Medrash says it was to Menashe he screamed. Who did he tell it to? Menashe was the one in charge of his whole affairs, like we learned before. So he says, let them get out of here. The Egyptians, if they would be on their own, the people would lose respect for Yosef also. What's going on in this dysfunctional family? You know, they want to kill him, they don't want to kill him. Okay. So another reason, the Mefarshim say another interesting thing, why did Yosef ask everybody to leave? For the same reason we learned before, that the ban was still existing. Until Yosef and the brothers broke the ban, that nobody's allowed to tell. Remember last week we discussed, why didn't Yosef send a message to Yaakov that he's still alive? And we said because of the ban. Now the ban was effective until the people that made the ban took it off, which had to be the brothers. So until the brothers took off the ban, Yosef couldn't tell the people that I'm Yosef, because then he would be breaking the ban that you're not allowed to tell what the brothers did. So therefore Yosef had to ask everybody to leave. Another thing, and this is an important lesson, as we said before, Yosef was at risk that Yehuda could hurt him. Yet Yosef understood, it's better to risk my life than to embarrass my brothers publicly. If he says to, what did Yosef say? I am Yosef, you sold to Egypt. This would embarrass the brothers. Look what you did. You sold your innocent brother. So Yosef was really ready to risk his life rather than embarrass the brothers. And this we find earlier in Chumash with Yehuda and Tamar, like we learned. From there the Gemara learns that it's better to throw yourself into a burning furnace, a burning fire, rather than embarrass somebody publicly. And Yosef did this again, showing that he was willing to risk his life rather than embarrass the brothers in a public way. Okay. V'le'amad ish itay, and no man stood with him. Bizvada Yosef alachav, and Yosef told his brothers. When Yosef made himself be known to the brothers. So what happened? V'yitin eskele b'vchi, he started crying in an uncontrolled way. V'yishmu Mitzrayim, the Egyptians heard. Now, how did the Egyptians hear? It's like typical thing. You send somebody out of the room, you know, they stand by with their ears next to the door to hear what's going on. So all the Egyptians who were sent out of the room were listening from behind the door what's going on. And Yosef was crying uncontrollably, so they were able to hear him. Was it mean?
Uncontrollably.
He couldn't control himself.
You can't stop it, honey. You can't do anything about it.
Okay.
And probably they were listening too because they had a responsibility to protect him.
No, they were listening because they were Yentis.
Okay.
They liked him. I don't think it was because they wanted to protect him. Okay, so first Mitzrayim heard, because those were the people that were around the door. Vayishma Beis Pari and Paris household heard. That means everybody heard the crying, that it got even to Paris' knowledge, and Paris heard that he was crying. And this is a remarkable pasuk. Yosef said to the brothers, "Ani Yosef, I am Yosef." Now the Medrash relates that there's a whole dialogue going on over here. Okay, and this is the sequence of events. Yehuda says, "I took responsibility," and this is pretty sharp. What's going on? This is before Yosef tells the brothers, but this is what led up. Why Yosef mamash had to tell his brothers he's Yosef. Yehuda says, I took responsibility for Binyamin, so you have to send them back. So Yosef said, why didn't you take responsibility for your other brother when you sold him for 20 silver pieces? Huh? That you didn't tell your father. Why didn't you take the responsibility then? So Yehuda got angry, and he called Naftali, and he said, Naftali, go see how many markets there are in Egypt. How many marketplaces? So Naftali ran very quick, came back, said 12. So Yehuda says, okay, I'll take 3, and you guys take the rest. There were 9 brothers there. You take the rest. So Yosef said to him, the brother said to Yehuda, Egypt's not Shechem. Because if you destroy Egypt, you're destroying the world. Because everybody needed Egypt for food. They said to Yehuda, you can't destroy. Shechem is a small little city you could destroy, but you can't destroy a big city. So Yehuda said, the fire of Shechem is burnt.
Egypt isn't a big city, it's a big country.
Correct. I'm glad you know that. The fire of Shechem burns within me. So Yosef said, it's not the fire of Shechem, it's the fire of your daughter-in-law Tamar that you wanted to burn. So Yehuda says, I'm going to dye all the markets of Egypt with blood. I'm going to make a bloody mess. So Yehuda said to him, Yosef said to Yehuda, you were dyers even before when you dyed your brother's coat in blood. He basically started telling him everything he did wrong.
Nobody's suspicious of this conversation.
So then Yosef said, did you not say that your brother, this one, is dead? Your other brother, you said Yosef is dead? I'm going to call him. The Medrash says, how did Yosef tell the brothers I'm here? He said to the brothers, you said Yosef is dead? How do you know? I'm going to call him. So he starts calling, Yosef, Yosef, Yosef. And the brothers are looking all over the place. He's not coming. He says, here I am. And Yosef, here I am. That's how he finally told the brothers. But they say a very interesting thing over here, in a much deeper sense. The brothers are suffering now for 22 years. Can you imagine what's the picture? There's Yaakov suffering for 22 years. Everybody suffering 22 years. The brothers are going through hell now, literally, in the last period of time with Binyamin and the money and everything. The whole issue was solved with two words, Ani Yosef. Once Yosef said, I am Yosef, everything fell into place. And the whole suffering of the last 22 years finished with two words. Mamish, two words. Ani Yosef. That stopped every problem that existed in the last 22 years with those two words. So Nefarshim explained that the Jews are suffering 2,000 years in Golus. As soon as David just says, you know, I'm a Shiach, whatever, it's all done. Everything is done.
Forget right away.
Yeah, but it's interesting. You know, you're talking about 22 years of history, of a very sad time in history over here, and in two words, everything is calmed. Ani Yosef. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I experienced that.
No more questions. There's no more answers. Like because from the Chofetz Chaim says, Mashiach comes. Hashem is going to say, "Ani Hashem." Yeah. After 210 years of Golus Mitzrayim, Hashem says to Mashiach, "Say to them, Ani Hashem." Once he said, "Ani Hashem," those two words, everything is solved. But the interesting question over here is that a lot of the commentaries ask, Yosef says, "Ani Yosef." Now, the first thing he says, "Ayda v'chai," is my father still alive? He asked the question before. The brothers didn't go home in between, so why is Yosef again asking, "Ayda v'chai"? Doesn't he know? So there's a number of answers over here. Rabbeinu Bachai answers, Yosef wanted to say basically he knew Yaakov was alive because the brothers told him before, and nothing changed. But he says, "My main concern about this whole thing is how's the father doing." In other words, he knew the answer to the question, but he's saying, what is the main concern and worry over here is, what's doing with Yaakov? Other Mefarshim learn, and this is where the Rebbe learns in the Sikha also, if I am Yosef, how could a father be alive? Because like we learned, on a dead person, Hashem decrees after 12 months you forget. The fact that Yosef says now, I am Yosef, means I'm alive, so I never died. And if I never died, there was never a decree on me that they should forget about me. So for 22 years, my father is suffering that I'm alive. So now that I need Yosef, now that I'm alive, how could he be alive? How could he have suffered such a suffering and still be alive? Other Mefarshim learn, Ha'ed Avichai doesn't mean is he physically alive. Ha'ed Avichai is he full of vigor, is he enthusiasm, is he, you know, vitality, is he alive, you know, Lebedek, yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing that Barman also answers a very balabatish type of an answer. Yosef had to open a conversation with them. You don't see your brother for 22 years. You're shocked out of your mind because they didn't expect him to be their brother. Yosef comes along and says, Ani Yosef. Like the pasuk says, they couldn't even answer him. Yeah? So, Yosef understood, he has to open a conversation. Like when you call somebody on the phone, you say, hi, hello, how are you? Not you're interested, how are you? Not you wait for an answer. But you got to start a conversation somehow, so you say, how are you?
You know what? I have a feeling when he said that, and I could just imagine it, is that they just all stopped and took like two steps backwards.
They did.
Is that what they did, really?
Yeah. Because
I just had this thing.
Yosef said to them, come to me.
And they took two steps.
I don't know if they took two steps back, but I'm saying.
Could you imagine like that revelation is just like what? You know, that's what naturally the instinct, the reaction.
The Medrash says their souls flew out. It says, "V'le'yachlu echav lanis mipanav." The brothers couldn't answer him. Kinevalu mipanav. They were concerned before him. They were like embarrassed. They were overwhelmed. They couldn't even do anything. And all of a sudden, the Malbim says they're afraid he might take revenge now. I mean, it's unbelievable. Other Mefarshim learned that Yosef's question over here, is father still alive, was a real question. He didn't know the answer. I, Yehuda, said the whole time, my father's alive. He thought, what Yehuda's going to say, bring him down too. So Yehuda kept saying, he's alive. What should he, you know? So, he wanted, he's alive. But now, you know, to gain sympathy, that Yehuda would say, old man's alive, so you know, you have to have Rachmanis on him, don't bring Binyamin down or whatever. But now, Yates is asking, now tell me the truth. Mm-hmm. Now tell me the real truth. Is he alive or is he not? Another thing the Mefarshim say, that Yosef admonished the brothers here. And Yosef said to them, how did you do this to your father for 22 years? How did you make him suffer for 22 years? It's not right. How do you expect him to survive? Okay, they couldn't, they were confused, they were frightened, they were embarrassed. You know, they couldn't bring to themselves that, as Daskenim says, what the brothers couldn't imagine. This young kid that was a slave became a ruler. So from one side he says, Ani Yosef. From the other side they say, it can't be. You know, how could he be such a person 22 years later? So, Vayem Yosef Alachov. In fact, they bring down an interesting Gemara in Chagiga, that if people got so embarrassed from Yosef saying, Ani Yosef, how much more so when we face God on the Day of Judgment? Mm-hmm. How we should be reacting to the seriousness. Some of Farshim learn that the Klayaki asks an interesting question. Now that he's Yosef, why doesn't he say Ha'ed Avinu Chai? Is our father alive? What does he say? My father? He should say Avinu Chai, no, Od Avinu Chai, like the song goes. Why does he speak singular my father? He should have said Ha'ed Avinu Chai. So the Klayaki says that itself is what Yosef told the brothers off. The way you treated him, he's not your father. The way you people treated him, it's no good. It's only my father.
Yeah, even Esau didn't want to kill Yaakov because of his father.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why that the Mefarshim say when Yosef says to the brothers, he said to Yehuda, you're begging mercy that you have to send Binyamin back because of the old man might die. So he said to him, and what you did to him for 22 years is right. All of a sudden you care about your old man. And what did you care about 22 years that you made him suffer?
But didn't they do tshuva right after?
They did tshuva, but Yosef still in the middle of the admonishing tshuva process. And it's about to end, by the way. I mean, it's ending now. But this is the last thing that Yosef says to them. Do you realize what aveira you did? He says, where were you for 22 years? All of a sudden you care about your father now. It's similar to the American holiday that's called Mother's Day and Father's Day. That the whole year they don't care about the parents. Mother's Day they buy her a box of candy. I mean, you know, where are you a whole year?
It's only some people. Some people devoutly love their parents.
Oh, everybody loves the parents. I'm seeing how they treat them. Everybody loves parents. By nature, you love parents.
How about he didn't have the Dargah of Nevoah?
Huh? Who? Sure he did.
So how come he didn't know is that he's a
Nevuah when it comes... How come Yaakov didn't know Yosef was alive? He was a big Navi. Yeah. Hashem didn't want him to know. A lot of personal things Hashem doesn't know, or you have even the strength of Hashem halimi many. That God hid it from me. Sometimes God doesn't want Nevi'im to know, for whatever reason. Doesn't mean a Navi knows everything just because he's a Navi. Those things Hashem tells him, he knows. Those things Hashem doesn't tell him, he doesn't know.
And he was part of the band.
Huh?
And he was part of the band.
So he didn't know.
That's
true.
Rabbi, do I remember that Yosef was sold into slavery because his brothers were jealous of him?
Yeah.
Thank you. The way Yonkav treated Yosef?
Yep.
They were jealous?
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Pasik Dalet. V'yeimei Yosef Elechov. Yosef said to his brothers, Kshana Eli, come to me, Vayigoshu, and they came closer. Now, what went on over here? So first of all, Yosef said, the brothers are now ashamed. Okay? So therefore he said, come close, you know, don't be ashamed. I'm your brother, I'm not going to take revenge, come closer to me. Other people learn that, like Rashi says, what do you mean come close to me? The brothers didn't believe him. So Yosef showed them, this is what Rashi said, that he was circumcised. Now the Mefarshim discuss, it doesn't mean in a literal sense. It means Yosef, obviously would have been immodest, but he told them that he was circumcised. And even though we learned before in the Chumash that Yosef told all the Egyptians to circumcise themselves, so he says, and normally, as the olden time kings would do, they would tell everybody to do things, but they wouldn't do it if it hurt. So Yosef said, you see that I'm circumcised myself because obviously it's very important to me. And also, as Yosef is going to say, he started speaking to them in Hebrew. So everything together, the brothers understood that Yosef has to be alive. Now, there's an interesting Klayakar over here, and the Klayakar says the following. Later on in Mitzrayim, when the Jews were in Mitzrayim, they merited, some places it says three things, some places it says four things. The Jews merited to leave Egypt because they kept four mitzvahs. I mean, they didn't change the name, they kept the Jewish names, they kept the Jewish garments, they kept their language, and they didn't speak Lashon Hara. This is what the... I know, that's the last one we got a question. But because that's against Jewish tradition. That's against Jewish tradition.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, but the time where Ram spoke was about Moshe, no?
Moshe, huh?
He spoke Shonra, they told to Pharaoh that Moshe...
Yeah, but he wasn't in Mitzrayim at that time.
It was a Midian.
Huh?
They didn't have
Yeah, but he still didn't change the name. They kept the Jewish names. They kept the Jewish garments. They kept the Jewish language, Hebrew language, and they didn't speak Lashon Hara. So the Klayakar says, in the next psukim we'll see that Yosef Takik is telling them, I kept all these things in Egypt too. He says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Parah gave him a name, Tzafnas Paneach. Mm-hmm. But Yosef didn't say, I'm Tzafnas Paneach. He said, I'm Yosef, meaning I kept my Hebrew name. And then he said, the Shemechayta Meisi Mitzrayma, that you sold me to Egypt. He called the brothers over that nobody should hear because he didn't want to speak Lashon Hara. The fact that he showed that he was circumcised showed that he kept, so to speak, his Jewish garments. And he spoke to them, as it's going to say, he spoke to them in Hebrew. Ki pi amedaber aleichem, my mouth is Hebrew speaking to you. So Yosef says to the brothers, in Egypt, I merited to keep all the things that the Jews will eventually merit to take them out of Egypt when they're there. So Yosef kept the morality, he kept his name, he kept his language, he kept his garments, everything he kept like the Jews eventually kept.
Well, that's he's Yosef HaTzadik, because in this environment to keep is not easy.
Oh, definitely not. That's why he's called Yosef HaTzadik. And that's why in a few psukim we will learn that Yaakov didn't believe he was alive. It's not that he didn't believe physically he was alive. He couldn't believe that Yosef was still Yosef HaTzadik, religious in Egypt. with no community, no environment, you know, that he couldn't believe.
Not Rabbi Schuster.
That's what that would have ruined him. Okay, he says, and here the Mfashim, just in the language of the Pasuk, is a very interesting thing. He says, I'm Yasef, your brother, which you sold me into Egypt. So the Ababana and the Rechaim say, what does it mean? Even though you sold me into Egypt, I'm still your brother. That's what he said. Ani Yasef Achichem, I am still Yasef, your brother, even though Hashem Achartem Eisi Mitzrayim, you sold me to Mitzrayim. And in the Sfasemis, some of Hashem learn that Hashem Achartem, Asher comes to the word like Ashrei, Ishur, Yashir Koyachacha. He said, Asher, it's good Machartem Eisi Mitzrayim that you sold me to Egypt. Not only, like we learned, not only did Yosef tell the brother, look, a terrible thing you did to me. Yosef is telling the brothers, as we'll see later in the Pesukim, he tells them clearly, Asher, it's good that you sold me, because look at now, we can support the world because of this, and I can support you, and look what happened. See, Stam, he's not saying I'm Yosef, your brother. He's saying I'm still your brother, even though you sold me and you wanted to kill me and everything, I'm still your brother. And now he says as follows. Now, al tiyotzvu, don't become distressed, don't become sad. Vayicha beinechem, don't be angry. Ki mechartem eisi heine, that you sold me here. Okay? Don't be angry. Ki lemichya shlachani alekim lefnechem. Because for salvation, as a provider, Hashem sold me here. Hashem put me here. Okay? Hashem sent me beforehand. It was good. And this is an unbelievable lesson. The problem is, sometimes Hashem shows it to us openly, and sometimes He doesn't. And the problem is, when we see it openly, we can handle it. When we don't, we have a problem. And that is, Yosef is basically telling the brothers, the worst thing you could have possibly done to me was kill me, throw me into a pit full of snakes and scorpions, like we read in last week's Parsha, Vaberek, Ein Bay Mayim. I mean, I'm sorry, in this week's Parsha, coming up, Vayeshev, I'm thinking Vayigash. Vaberek Ein Bay Mayim, the pit is empty, without any water, and the Gemara says it was no water, but snakes and scorpions were in there, so it was a dangerous pit to begin with. And they wanted to kill him. They threw him at the pit full of snakes and scorpions. Then they sold him as a slave, which as far as they were concerned, he could have been dead. Yeah? And Yosef teaches the brothers, bottom line, if God did it, it's for the good.
Absolutely.
And not only, and we learned the Maimon of the Rebbe explains, not only is the outcome good, but the actual selling was good. For they were fortunate, they were lucky that they saw it. They were lucky that they saw it. But the lesson of it is, whatever Hashem does is for the good. If we're lucky, if we merit, Hashem shows it openly, the good, like over here. But what could be worse than wanting to kill your own brother? What could be worse? Yet Hashem says, I mean, Yosef says, look how great it was. So Hashem never does anything bad. And therefore he says, don't get angry at one another. Who did it? Who did it? You did it. He did it. He said, what's the difference? It's very good that it happened. It took him 22 years to find out. But, you know, all is well that ends well, I guess.
Well, it's the original Disney movie here, because usually it doesn't end well all the time. He could have died. He could have really died. How is it the snake didn't poison him?
He was saved.
That's what I'm saying, because he's a tzaddik. It doesn't happen to everyone that he's a tzaddik.
Okay.
Only reason. Very big compliment.
Now, but as we see in the psukim over here, there's two distinct things going on here. the brothers, there's the brother's perspective and there's Yosef's perspective. As far as the brothers were concerned, they did a terrible act. Because they didn't know that was God's intention. When they sold Yosef, they didn't think, because Yosef has to go to Egypt and they have a dream and all that other stuff. Their intention was bad. And for that, they have to do tshuva. And therefore, Yosef had a moral responsibility of admonishing your friend. Yosef had a moral obligation to admonish the brothers for what they did. But as far as Yosef was concerned, Yosef looked at the outcome and saw that it was only good. They had to be punished for what they did, and therefore we know later on during Churban Bayisheni, 10 martyrs were killed, Asar Arugim Malchus, because 10 brothers sold Yosef as a slave. And they were punished later. The question is, if what they did was good, they should be rewarded and not punished. The answer is, that's not as far as they're concerned. As far as they're concerned, their act was bad. As far as what Hashem did, that was fabulous. Yosef, looking at another, like we said many times, the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, if you get angry, it's idol worshipping. You get angry at somebody for doing something bad to you, it's Eved Avedah Zarah, the Gemara says, you're worshipping idols. Why? The Alter Rebbe explains very simply. If it happened to you, God made it happen. If you hit me, went through this the other night, but if I bring it, when, if somebody hits you, you were meant to get hit. It's nothing to do with the guy that hit you.
But you don't think
him. Hashem doesn't. Yeah, you should thank him. As we discussed the other night, you should hug him and kiss him.
But there's no oil.
There's no oil. You need oil. Anyway, the point is that the person that did it to you has nothing to do with him. Don't be angry at him because he didn't do it. He was God's agent. He was God's stick. Okay? If somebody hits you with a stick, you don't scream at the stick. Right? You scream at the guy that did it. You don't scream, what do you scream at the stick for? The stick had, what do you want from the stick? The stick didn't do it. The guy, one second. So therefore, if somebody hits you, you have to understand that comes from Hashem, number one. So what are you angry at the person for? He's just got stick. Secondly, if God does it, it's really good. Because anything God does is good. Now, that person who hit you, between him and God, he got to do tshuva. Has nothing to do with you. And that's what Yosef is teaching, is this mamish was going on over here with Yosef. The Sigar Sekej, Simon Chafei of Dalt Rebbe and Tanya, is really the story of Yosef and the brothers. Yosef admonished the brothers as a leader. Yosef said to the brothers, you, as far as you're concerned, you did bad. As far as me, it was great. They did it to him. Yosef separated the issues. You guys have to do tshuva for the terrible sin you did of wanting to kill your brother, torturing your father, whatever it is. Bottom line is, as far as I'm concerned, thank you very much. Yep.
I should go ahead.
Add something?
Sure, you can even subtract too.
I should.
Can I correct?
No.
Okay. Yosef still had to admonish his brother because you said no matter what, he has to bring them the awareness that they did something wrong.
Correct.
So means if someone abuses you, you grew up in a home that you were very abused physically or sexually, or if you were abusing your business with a partner, you still have to, even if it's a tool that Hashem sends to bring you into a test and it's all for the good, you still have to go into the process of recognizing that someone did hurt you through the business, and this person could have not hurt you. It's like Pharaoh has the choice not to let the people go or let the people go. So there is still a certain amount of will.
That's between him and God. Between him and God, though, not between the person.
Between him and God, to choose good or bad.
Right.
Okay.
And that's what Yosef is admonishing the brothers. Forget me, he said. For as far as I'm concerned, this is great. But you, between you and God, You didn't know that this was the master plan. You did bad. That's your free choice between you and God. That has nothing to do with me.
But you can come back and tell this the person. You don't have to make it like go in there the rug.
Yeah, but the problem is, I understand what you're saying. I mean, just like Yosef admonished the brothers, Lochedu, we should be able to admonish somebody that doesn't.
Yeah, and it's
but you know where the sensitivity, and there's a very fine line over here, that Yosef is a tzaddik, was able to do it, and we can't. Because by us, it's a personal vendetta. It's a personal grudge of revenge. Yosef, the tzaddik that he was, had no connection to revenge. And it's a very fine line. We could say, I don't mean revenge. I just mean that you did something wrong, but God forbid. I mean, you know, we all have personal feelings, and when somebody does something bad to me, we don't like the person. Let's be realistic. So then, when I'm admonishing them, the question first is, where is it coming from?
The intention.
Where, right. By Yosef, the tzaddik that he was,
yeah.
By him it was mamish pure. Yeah.
So...
Well, okay, let me just finish to reiterate the point, which is very important. Yosef was a tzaddik who was able to separate the issues between what was done to him and the evil the brothers did. Okay? I would even venture to say all of us, okay, present, are not on that level to be able to say there is absolutely no personal revenge or vendetta or any feelings like that. Because if yeah, then you can't do it.
But how do you know which is
in the one second. Now your husband comes first, yeah.
Okay.
No?
Quick question. So a person, A person should never get angry.
Correct.
B, so that means a father with his child.
It says I'm only supposed to show anger, not be angry. Shulchan Aruch says, right.
From here.
So those teachers who are showing anger,
are normal human beings, right. But they're not supposed to be.
Okay.
Obviously, this is a very lofty level that a person should never be able to get angry and understand how to separate the issues, that whatever happened to me is coming completely only from God. And if Hashem does it, it's obviously only good. And this, that the guy did it to me, that's it between him and God. It's nothing to do with me.
What? Can be.
A person gets angry with somebody, but within a very reasonable amount of time, maybe an hour or so, they change their mood.
Well, that you haven't picky of us. There's people that get angry quickly and get unangry fast. There are people that get angry slow and get unangry, you know, four levels.
You want to dance the dance of that other person getting angry afterward.
A person has to have control over themselves, okay. Not to get angry.
So once you apologize and you're grateful, does that clean the slate? And
it's supposed to.
Huh?
It's supposed to.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
He's two kind of angry. He's angry who go only from the throat, like you yelled at your kids. Oh my goodness! Yeah. So. No.
Finish. Yeah.
From throat is angry from the heart. That is the difference. Never be angry from heart. Yeah. Only from here.
Yeah, for the truth.
Yeah, and heart you need to love. You see, I love you, but I'm angry at you from here, not from heart.
Yeah, that's very good point.
That if you can make that effort, you can control that.
Okay. Now, the Bavanel explains that anger or being upset is when something bad comes from what you did. When does a person grieve? When something bad comes from what you did. But if something good comes from what you did, then you shouldn't be upset. And that's what Yosef is telling the brothers, don't be upset. Now, Yosef, obviously, the fact that Yosef had to say this, the Mepharshim say that Yosef obviously noticed that we're getting upset with themselves. Because if not, what is Yosef telling it to them for? So Mepharshim explained that Yosef observed that they were getting upset and angry, and they were about to start blaming one another, you know, I should have listened to you, you said, they said, they said. So he says, don't get angry. Kilamichya Shalchani Alakim Lefnecham, Hashem sent me before you as a provider. So he says in Pasuk Vav, Kizashin Asaimarov Bekedva Oritz, there's already 2 years of hunger in the land. For eight chomishanim, and there's gonna be another 5 years of hunger. Asher in Chodesh Vikotzir, that there's not going to be any plowing or any harvest because there's still the famine for 7 years. The fact was, Leperl, that the hunger stopped. As soon as Yaakov and his family came down, the hunger stopped. But the hunger was supposed to be for 7 years. It ended up only being for two. But Yosef said, listen, guys, but Yosef didn't know that now. You know, Yosef said, listen, guys, there's only 2 years of the hunger finished, and we got five more years to go. So therefore, I want that you should, Hashem sent me here, and I want everybody to come down.
If Yosef had known and said, don't worry, you know, it's going to be over.
He didn't know.
If he did know and said something like that, then Yaakov wouldn't have come down, right? He might not have come down to fulfill that.
He might have come down to see Yosef because Yosef couldn't leave.
Yeah.
And Hashem said to Avraham Avinu anyway that the people are going to be in slaves in Egypt.
They had to come down.
So whether Yaakov would have come down or not, maybe. Yeah, but officially the reason he went down is because he needed food.
Yeah.
The real reason was because he had to be, well, not to be, the real reason is because the Jews had to be in Egypt for 210 years. Another unofficial reason, he had to see his son that he didn't see for 22 years. If you didn't see your son for 22 years and he can't come to you, you'll go to him.
The exile of Egypt is the consequence of Abraham.
No consequence.
Well, why we have to be exile in Egypt?
It's a refining process.
No, but there was something.
Refining process.
It wasn't in fact something happened.
Refining process.
Just refining process.
To receive the
Torah.
Wasn't
Abraham told that you
chose? Yeah, but she's asking why though. It's not a punishment for something they did.
No, but it was, we were told. But we were told it would happen.
Right.
No, I thought it was a consequence.
It was a refinement process, a refining of the Jewish nation to be able to receive the Torah. When you have coarse hide of an animal and you want to make it into leather or parchment, you have to torture the hide, meaning tanning it, ma'abed, which is the malacha by Shabbos, and you have to rework it over until you make it into something good.
Yeah, like a diamond.
Like a diamond, like a Jew, like a body, like a Yetzer Hara, which is what davening is all about.
Out of the comfort zone.
Yep. Okay. And he says,
when you say Yitzhara, where davening comes, I didn't understand that.
The whole concept of davening is to refine the person. It's the whole concept of davening. Now, Yosef is saying, the Tzipurna says, why is Yosef telling him that you sold me? The brothers didn't know. What's he saying to the brothers? You sold me here. Of course they know that he sold them here.
He's proving who he is.
Oh, so the Sephora says that's the only proof, because the only one that knows who sold was the brothers. So Yosef, this is just part of the proof, without a silver goblet there, you know. But Yosef is saying to them, listen, the proof is that I need Yosef because I'm the only one that, I know that you that I was sold. And he says, no, because the brothers already were in part of it. Right. And he even whispered to them, it says that Binyamin shouldn't even hear it. Because he didn't want Binyamin to go tell Yaakov what happened. And officially, until Yaakov passed away, Yitzhak didn't know. Officially. I wasn't there, but officially he didn't know.
Yes, you were. You said
it. Okay. So now he says, don't be upset that you sold me here because Hashem made it good. Klemichya, he sent me as a provider. You're only Hashem's instruments, so therefore don't worry about it. And he said, God is sending me before you, he put me before you. To put survival in the land, and to make it to sustain you, the flate of the Gedela for a great deliverance. Chassidus explains, and we learned this in the Maimir, Chassidus explains there's two things why Yosef ended up in Egypt earlier. One reason why Yosef ended up in Egypt earlier was because by Yosef being in Egypt early, he allowed the Jews to refine all the sparks of Kedusha of Egypt. The whole purpose of everything that happens is to refine sparks of Kedusha. Now, by Yosef coming down to Egypt earlier, he tread the way that when the brothers were able to come down with Yaakov and the Shvatim and everything else, so, and that's why he says, Vayishalcheini Elokim Lefneichem. God sent me here that you should be able to refine the sparks of Egypt on a much higher level. So it was made easier for the brothers that they're able to do in 210 years what should have taken 400 years. Because Hashem really promised Avraham Avinu they're going to be slaves 400 years. But by Yosef going down earlier, they made it, instead of 400 years, they made it 210 years to refine the sparks. And that's why Hashem made it easier by having all the money of the world end up in Egypt. The whole money of the civilized world at that time, where the hunger was, in the whole civilized world, so everybody came, Kol Ha'aretz, the whole world, came to Yosef to buy food. So everybody brought the money. So all the sparks of Kedusha from all over the civilized world happened in Egypt. The Jews didn't have to go all around the world doing it. Like today, we have to be all around the world elevating sparks. The Jews were all concentrated, all the money was concentrated in Mitzrayim because of Yosef's interpretation of the dreams and the dreams coming true and Yosef's taking away all the money and everything. So because of that, the brothers were able to elevate all the sparks. And from the 288 sparks of Kedusha that existed in the world, the Jews left Egypt with 202 sparks elevated. There's only 86 left. That means in 210 years, Yosef, the brothers, through Yosef, elevated the 202 sparks of Kedusha out of the 288 that fell down.
For that is writing that... When they go out on Egypt, they ain't empty.
But you're not supposed to miss them, empty out of Egypt.
That means.
And that's why it says, the Gam Erev Rav Ola Itam. Erev Rav simply means all the multitudes of Egyptians that followed them. But Erev comes the word Ta'aruvais, mixture. Rav Reish Beis. The mixture of sparks of 202, Olu Itam the Jews took out.
Mean,
because
yeah.
When the waiters dropped the vessels of Tehu, the dishes of Tehu, when they broke, when the Shvir Sakelim of Tehu, so it says 288 sparks of Kedusha fell into this world.
Huh?
In the restaurant books, they dropped the key. In Kabbalah it says, Repach Nitzutzim.
Is it the Gematria of Tehu?
No.
So how did they calculate the 288?
Where Kabbalah got it from? I don't know.
No. It's not calculated.
No.
Words? No.
The Pachni Tzitzis were 288 sparks of Kedusha that fell down when there were Shvir Sakelim of the world of Tehu. And they all fell into the world. And basically the whole world of that then came to Egypt. And the Eden took out all the money with them. So that's why they elevated 202 out of the 288. And what's left is 86. Which is the numerical value of Elohim, equivalent in the past, Elohim, which equals 86, and that's the level of the Jews from Yetzias Mitzrayim until Mashiach, to elevate 86. And that's why Jews find themselves all over the world. In other words, the advantage of Golus, and you have to find the good in everything, the advantage of Golus is that the Jews are not concentrated in Eretz Yisrael, where then they can't elevate the sparks from all over the world. Because how can you elevate the sparks of Australia and Europe and Asia and in America if everybody's in Israel? So Hashem sent Golus as a way of getting Jews around the world, that they should be able to do Torah mitzvahs around the world and elevate the sparks of Kedusha there.
Some is also a bit easier to elevate than others?
Yeah, of course. A little louder, please. Through the Aved of the Jews in Mitzrayim, whatever they did, yeah. Yes. And that's why Golus is essentially good. What?
What about the rest? When is finished the job?
The rest, you see this, by the way, we mentioned this. You see this, you see this physically. You know that in America, you have in LA a few communities like that, that in New York you have like that, in Chicago you have like the big cities you have, there's certain areas which were heavily Jewish populated, and then the Jews left and the neighborhood fell apart.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah,
you have Boyle Heights. I mean, you have areas here in the city.
All over the world,
does that mean? Right. What does that mean? The Jews were there, they elevated all the sparks of Kedusha of that area, and they left, and it fell apart because it was refined already. So there's nothing left for the Jews to do.
But that's not more Jewish in Romania.
Right. They took out all the sparks.
When it's refined, it falls apart.
Huh?
When it's refined, it falls apart.
Yeah, there's no purpose of a Torah mitzvah anymore, so what happened?
Elevated.
Hmm?
How could something elevated be useless?
No, they took away the sparks of Kedusha, and the evil fell down. You know, you only elevate the sparks of Kedusha there, and the evil falls away. It's not that you elevate the evil.
Those
86
sparks?
Huh?
Those
86
sparks?
There's 86 left, I don't know, you know.
When there's a spark elevated, it could be a part of the spark?
It's probably part of a spark, yes.
So they all fell into very little?
Probably most of them.
Yeah, most of them.
We just haven't seen them yet.
No, we see the sparks. The problem is getting them.
Okay. Bye-bye. They're free.
Releasing them is hard. Take him out of captivity.
Rabbi, this thought has been with me since you went back to answer the phone. You said that the Eibishter encourages somebody to hit somebody, then that person must do tshuva, right? Is that what you said? The funny thing is,
Hashem doesn't encourage somebody to hit
somebody. When I was growing up, every time I played baseball, basketball, football, hockey,
and the east side,
found out, he gave me a licking. I didn't go to cheder. I was playing at the boys' club. He found out. He gave me a licking. But he never did tshuva. All of a sudden, he's arrested
the beast. He's a father.
But he never did
tshuva.
The only thing he had to do tshuva, that he didn't hit you more. That's the tshuva. That's the tshuva that he didn't do. More than that, he didn't have to do tshuva.
He's a father, it's not a friend.
Okay. Viata now, okay. Shlishi, Potziches. Viata now, he continues in the same process. And Chassidus explained each Potzik here is deeper than the one before about what actually went on. Viata now, Loyatem Shlechtem Asiyem. Now he says even more. Not only was the outcome good, right? The outcome was good. He said, even the sending came from Hashem. Not only you sent me, which was bad, but the outcome is good. He says, even the sending came directly from Hashem, which was good. The Ata now, you should know. Le'atim shlachtem esiyein, you didn't send me. Kihu alikim, only the level of Elokim. As Mepharshim say, Elokim is the attribute of Gvura, but it's still Elokim. Vayisimeini li'ov lefarei. And as the Mepharshim say, Darachayim explains, Yosef is now trying to show the brothers how no hatred he has for them. There's mamish, no animosity. So first he says to the brothers, the outcome was good. Now he takes it even a step further. Not only is the outcome good, but even the actual thing you did was good. Because it wasn't you. Kiyah l'kim, it was only Hashem. Vayisimeini of lefarei. And he made me as a father to Pari, and obviously he's not a physical father, to figuratively speaking, mentor, that Pari was able to look up to him. And as a master to the whole household. Meaning, everybody calls me master. Which again, Yosef is not going now on an ego trip. He's saying, look how much godliness was brought into Egypt because of what you did. That Goyim are calling a Jew master. Pare is calling me his mentor. So he says, he said to the brother, can you imagine what's going on over here? He says, number one, there's food because of I'm here, right? Secondly, there's such a level of the Goyim recognizing the greatness of a Jew and the greatness of God that I'm Pare's mentor. Everybody calls me master. And I ruled the complete level of Egypt. Okay? So now, what the Mepharshim say, what is Yosef saying now? The brothers were upset that Yosef slandered them to Yaakov. Remember, that's what the bothered the brothers. In last week's Parsha, when it says that Esav married Machlas, okay, it says, why was she called Machlas?
Because of Ishmael?
Esav married Machlas, who is the daughter of Ishmael, correct. So it says Why was she called Machlas? Because there's three people that get forgiven for all their sins. When you get married, Ha'ela L'Gdula, when you become great. So Yosef said, my sin was forgiven because I became a king. I became a ruler. So it says, therefore God obviously forgave me for my sin. See, B'chal, what you for sure should forgive me.
Who served one?
Huh? What did Rashi say? God, Rashi is in Vayishlach. One second. Here. Geshen is Gayer, Eile L'Gdula V'Nesi Isha. A convert, the person becomes great, and one who gets married.
Does that apply only to Jewish people, or does it apply to the going too?
I don't know.